At Skeldale House, the wisteria exploded into a riot of mauve blooms, which thrust themselves through the open windows, and each morning as I shaved, I breathed in the heady fragrance from the long clusters drooping by the side of the mirror. Life was idyllic. There was only one jarring note. It was the time of the horse. In the 30s, there were still quite a lot of horses on the farms, though the tractors had already sounded their warning knell. In the farms near the foot of the dale, where there was a fair amount of arable land, the rows of stables were half empty, but there were still enough horses to make May and June uncomfortable. This was when the castrations were done. Before that came the foaling, and it was a common enough thing to see a mare with a foal either trotting beside her or stretched flat on the ground as its mother nibbled at the grass. Nowadays, the sight of a cart mare and foal in a field would make me pull up my car to have another look. There was all the work connected with the foalings. Cleansing the mares, docking the foals' tails, treating the illnesses of the newborn, joint ill, retained meconium. It was hard and interesting, but as the weather grew warmer, the farmers began to think of having the year-old colts castrated. I didn't like the job, and since there might be up to 100 to be done, it cast a shadow over this and many subsequent springs. For generations, the operations had been done by casting the colt and tying him up very like a trussed chicken. It was a bit laborious, but the animal was under complete restraint, and it was possible to concentrate entirely on the job. But at about the time I qualified, standing castration was coming very much to the fore. It consisted simply of applying a twitch to the colt's upper lip, injecting a shot of local anesthetic into each testicle, and going straight ahead. There was no doubt it was a lot quicker. The obvious disadvantage was that the danger of injury to the operator and his helpers was increased tenfold, but for all that, the method rapidly became more popular. A local farmer called Kenny Bright, who considered himself an advanced thinker, took the step of introducing it to the district. He engaged Major Farley, the horse specialist, to give a demonstration on one of his colts, and a large gathering of farmers came to spectate. Kenny, smug and full of self-importance, was holding the twitch and beaming around the company as his protege prepared to disinfect the operation site. But as soon as the major touched the scrotum with his antiseptic, the colt reared and brought a forefoot crashing down on Kenny's head. He was carried away on a gate with his skull fractured and spent a long time in hospital. The other farmers didn't stop laughing for weeks, but the example failed to deter them. Standing castration was in. I said it was quicker. It was, when everything went smoothly. But there were other times when the colt kicked or threw himself on top of us, or just went generally mad. Out of 10 jobs, 9 would be easy, and the 10th would be a rodeo. I don't know how much apprehension this state of affairs built up in other vets, but I was undeniably tense on castration mornings. Of course, one of the reasons was that I was not, am not, and never will be, a horseman. It is difficult to define the term, but I am convinced that horsemen are either born or acquire the talent in early childhood. I knew it was no good my trying to start in my mid-20s. I have the knowledge of equine diseases. I believed I had the ability to treat sick horses efficiently. But that power the real horseman had, to soothe and quieten and mentally dominate an animal, was beyond my reach. I didn't even try to kid myself. It was unfortunate because there is no doubt horses know. It is quite different with cows. They don't care either way. If a cow feels like kicking you, she will kick you. She doesn't give a damn whether you are an expert or not. But horses know. So on those mornings, my morale was never very high, as I drove out with my instruments rattling and rolling about on an enamel tray on the back seat. Would he be wild or quiet? How big would he be? I had heard my colleagues airily stating their preference for big horses. The two-year-olds were far easier, they said. You could get a better grip on the testicles. But there was never any doubt in my own mind. I liked them small. The smaller, the better.